My Lord, as we come to you today, as we all stand in the same room, all here worshipping you and trying to come and be in your presence, I just want to pray that you speak through Ben today and speak to each and every one of us in this room and really give us something to come away with, you know, and that you'll just want to bless Ben in the name of God. Amen.
Amen. Great, thank you. So, there's no microphone, no need for any of that?
No.
What are you trying to say?
That's all being recorded.
Let's pull that out.
I was trying to subtly do it without making comments about Mark's fate. There you go, that's fine.
Yeah, well, it happens. You don't need to be subtle about that here.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's good to be at a church where you get a lot of stick the moment you work in the door. It feels like being at home, so thanks for that. I've already been threatened with violence just for being from Leicester. So at this point, I do want to distance myself from the Leicester side. I'm not a rugby fan, particularly, but I have been shamelessly jumping on the Leicester City bandwagon. So, you know, let's pray for this afternoon's game. It's great to be in a city where there's lots of good things happening, and we are excited about that. But I have to be honest and say I'm not really a Leicester City fan. I am actually a fan of a club that's three divisions lower than Northampton Town, even, called Darlington. So there you go. Very, very good. But it's good to be with you, and it was about 2.5 years the last time, and we enjoyed our time, and we're back today. We're going to talk, I believe, I know what I'm going to talk about. I don't know what we're expecting. I'm going to talk about discipleship, okay? I believe you've been going through various different tools and things like that that are about equipping us, and particularly for small groups. And I'm going to look at the issue and the topic of discipleship and look to see what the processes and systems that Jesus used in his discipleship were. Because you know what? He actually had them. Can you imagine if Jesus had come down onto the earth and lived his life and then walked out his ministry as a one-man itinerant ministry for 3.5 years, and at the end of his time he'd just gone off and said, alright guys, see you later, and there'd be no equipping whatsoever. Can you imagine what that would have been like? It wouldn't have been a very good plan, would it? Jesus didn't come and get 12 guys together to follow him around as bag carriers for 3 years. He actually did something very intentional, very purposeful, and very systematic with them to equip them so that when he left, they would be able to multiply out with such effect that the world would begin to be saved. That was his plan. Plan A, there's no plan B. He invested into others. And if you understand your call, and I believe you do, you'll know that your call and our call is to become disciples who make disciples. And Jesus left something of a blueprint for how to do that. Now, he didn't write a book that's mysteriously hidden in the scriptures that kind of says, here's what you do. But if we begin to look at his life, we can see some patterns and some systems and some processes that Jesus put in place, which meant that those disciples were well equipped to multiply out. And by the way, they were making disciples first and foremost of the lost, weren't they? It wasn't like it was suddenly here's a bunch of Christians to polish, make a bit shinier, because there were none. So the very nature of the discipleship that Jesus invested into the disciples that he worked with was to be those who would make disciples of the lost first and foremost, and grow them into maturity so that then they could then make disciples of others, and this thing multiplied out. It's incredible, isn't it? So I'm not going to be picking on one scripture. I'm going to be referring to lots of scriptures throughout the whole of the Bible, if you like, in order to build this picture. But that's my goal, really, to look at this process of discipleship. And I'm sure you've probably had or used lots of different definitions of discipleship. It's one of the most differently defined words I've ever come across in my life. A definition that I like is that discipleship is helping people move from unbelief to belief in every area of life. Yeah, moving from unbelief to belief in every area of life. And so for us, that means in both our character and the things that we know and believe about ourselves, the internal stuff, but then also the external stuff, the skills and the competencies that God gives us in order to be those that make disciples. Yeah, so it's character and competence, moving from belief, unbelief to belief in every way and in every part of our life. I could never be good enough to lead a Bible study, you say, because my identity is not strong enough. Well, moving from unbelief to belief in that area. And even if I was good enough, I'd never have the skills to be able to do it, you might say. Well, moving from unbelief to belief in the competencies around that area. That's what Jesus was about. Okay? So, Jesus calls us all to be disciples who make disciples. And what I'm going to do, basically, is take us through some of the things that we can draw from Scripture to build the picture of this pattern that Jesus has. And I'm going to do it in two ways. First of all, I'm going to look at it from the perspective of what it means to be a disciple, someone who's being discipled. Yeah? So what's the experience like to be discipled? What's going on there? And then I'm going to flip it, and we're going to talk about the same thing again, but from the perspective of the discipler. So what am I doing as a discipler? Because we want to do both, don't we? We just said we want to be disciples and posture ourselves well, but then we want to be disciples. Yeah. And every person in this room should be doing both, being open and discipled, but also being a disciple. Mm-hmm. And then we'll try and draw it all together at the end, and we'll try and do all that in time. So, okay, I'm going to use this. I'm useless for these things, by the way. I tend to produce them and then not use them.
So,
there you go. There's a good example. I'm not using it. So we said all that. Okay. So first of all, being a disciple. Okay. So the pattern. There's no surprise. The pattern is this: Jesus. There's kind of four stages to what he did. He said he did things, and the disciples watched, and then he moved to doing things and involving the disciples, so they helped. And then once they got some experience in the different things that they were doing, he began to get them to do things, and he helped them. And then eventually, he fully delegated things to them, and he left. That's the pattern, okay? So the first stage of that is he did it, and they watched. And basically, the disciples, at this point in time, in this point in their journey, they were utterly clueless. And they didn't know that what they didn't know. They were living in unconscious incompetence. They were utterly incapable of doing anything, and they didn't even know what they were capable of doing. It's a good place to be. And yet at the same time, somehow the posture that they carried was of high confidence and high enthusiasm. So they were low on competence and low on experience in anything at all that Jesus had to bring, but it didn't stop them from being confident and enthusiastic. Yeah? I relate to that. I don't know about you. I remember being a teenager.
Yeah.
I did. Too easy. I keep setting them up and you can go in. Yeah. And thinking like about this whole driving thing. And through from the age of about 14, all I wanted to do was learn to drive. Because honestly, it can't be that hard. My dad can do it for starters. Yeah. And all you got to do is point that thing and do that a bit. And you change the gears. It really can't be that hard. High confidence of high enthusiasm. And you're actually utter incompetence and no experience or expertise whatsoever. I didn't know what I didn't know. I was unconsciously incompetent. Yeah. I remember thinking, at the same age, I was a bit cocky looking back thinking about it. Maybe not much has changed. But thinking about just like things that I saw around in my life in the church and seeing people preach and thinking, I wouldn't mind having a go at that. That can't be that hard. All you got to do is stand up and gab on a bit and tell a few jokes. So I can't church I was in. And sit down again. And people seem to like it. I want to have a crack at that. Utter, utter, utter unconscious incompetence. That's what the disciples were like. So when Jesus comes and gathers them on the beaches of Galilee and says to them, come, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. They're like, yay, let's go fish for men. No idea what it is, but we can do that. Let's go, can't be that hard. They didn't have a clue what they were talking about, but there was something about their enthusiasm made them people that Jesus wanted to invest in. He saw something in them, didn't he? So that was the first phase. And he began to take them on a journey, and they followed. They were, at this stage, they were bag carriers. He was doing it, they were just watching. And they were going, yay, we can do that too. Jesus has picked me. Whoa. They moved then, pretty quickly, to a second stage, which is called conscious incompetence. You know what conscious incompetence is? It's when you suddenly become fully aware of how useless you are. That's something. How you can't do it. It's a good place to get to, by the way. When you begin to realise that you can't do something, that's when you start to become teachable. So you start listening hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
You start going, okay, I'm in trouble. I've been here a lot. I'm in trouble, I better learn fast. Time to listen. Time to pay attention. Yeah. At this stage in their journey, the disciples were low in confidence and low in enthusiasm. Suddenly it didn't seem all that fun to be doing the stuff that Jesus was doing, because they realised, I can't do it. I've got no confidence, and actually I just want to hide now. Yeah? And that's a testing time, isn't it? When that happens, suddenly you're thinking, am I going to run? Mm-hmm. Am I going to run, or am I going to stick with this? It can be a painful experience as we're squeezed under pressure, and we realise that this is about what God does, not what we do.
Yeah.
Not about my flesh, actually. It's about me being formed into some other character, and then having the competence that all come from heaven. It's not about me. So when I got behind that wheel for the first time, when I was 17, my birthday, I'm sure it was, it must have been, straight away. And, I was offended because my dad took me to this industrial estate where there was no chance of any other cars being anywhere near, because he thought that I was going to be dangerous. And I was offended. Why can't we go on the road? And then I got behind the wheel and I bunny hopped my way down this little bit of road. And it didn't take long. Suddenly I'm going, oh, I can't do this. I'm a bit embarrassed by my cockiness here. I can't do it. It was the same when I first actually went to preach. And I was stood in front of people. And let me just pick this passage up. It was like... bear with me. I think I had this passage. I stood in front of people. Picked up this passage and read this. Suddenly nervous. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And you will drive out demons, and in your name perform miracles. Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. And so what Jesus is trying to say to them is, not many of them will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the ones that do his Father's will enter the kingdom of heaven. And some will drive out demons, and some will say, I never knew you. Away from you, you evil doers. Amen. Okay. I'm not very good at this. It hit me hard that my cockiness suddenly was being exposed, and the words dribbled down my chin, and I was utterly embarrassed. There's something about being humbled, isn't there? And I think that God is gracious with us. Sometimes he gives us the opportunity to avoid being humbled and humiliated if we humble ourselves and we make ourselves teachable.
Yeah.
If we don't, we have to learn the hard way. That's how it works. I think the disciples of Jesus were a bunch of guys that kind of learned the hard way. He saw all their enthusiasm, but they kind of kept stumbling over themselves time and time again. Yeah. And they had to learn the hard way, so he kept humbling them. taken to this place of utter consciousness of their incompetence. But eventually, they realised, okay, I need to pay attention. I need to open my heart, make myself vulnerable, and learn. And that's where we want to get to. So my suggestion is, if we want to be good disciples, then the faster we get there, the easier it'll be. The more we submit ourselves to those who've gone before us, or have some wisdom, the easier it's going to be, and the faster we're going to grow. The temptation is to jump back to the start and just have a go at something else, but let's persevere, shall we? Let's stick in and allow the Lord to grow us in the things that he wants to. In Mark 4:35-41, this is kind of right after Jesus giving some pretty challenging teaching on what life in the kingdom is about. And then he takes the disciples away from the crowds on retreat, and they get into the boat with him, yeah? And there's a big storm, and it's all looking like they think they're going to die, basically. And then Jesus calms the storm. And in that moment, the disciples are experiencing something of this humbling vulnerability where they've been with him. They think they can do what he can do. And suddenly, they're utterly vulnerable. They're utterly vulnerable. And they see that Jesus is the one who can do it. He's the one who can equip them. He's the one that brings peace. And they begin to get some recognition of him. That's what it feels like to be in this second stage of discipleship. Dealing with your own inadequacies and lack of faith. Character being exposed. They think they're right on it with Jesus. With the big cheese himself. And suddenly they realise what they can't do. And they become all ears. So the third stage then is he did it and they helped. So the good news is the disciples did actually begin to grow. They moved to this place of conscious competence. So suddenly they're now actually quite competent. They're able to do things and they know that they're able to do things. Okay, that's not rocket science, is it? They can do stuff and they know that they can do it. But because that's kind of the stage they're at, everything's very deliberate. You know, when you get to grips with something and you begin to do it and you learn something new, you do it, but you're very deliberate about it because you have to think about it. Yeah, so it's conscious, having to think about what I'm doing. Okay, put this there, and then I get this, and we put that together, and it'll work. And I think I've got it. Yeah, it's kind of like that. The disciples reached this third stage. They were characterized by growing enthusiasm again. They hit their bottom, but they pushed through. They made themselves vulnerable, and they were coming up again. They were competent, and they had intermittent enthusiasm, because things were beginning to happen, and their experience was growing. Back to driving. I remember gaining confidence as I finally got on the road, and I was able to drive, and I was kind of, it was okay. I had to think about it, mirror, signal, whatever it was, all that sort of thing. But my dad was obviously growing in confidence as well, because I remember we'd drive up and down the Tyne Valley. I'm from the northeast originally, and after a while I'd look around and he's asleep in the passenger seat, thinking he thinks I've got it now. So I would be like, put my foot down a bit, there we go. And one day took the corner a little bit too tightly, I think I got away with it. I was growing in confidence, but I was actually really having to concentrate at the same time on mirror, signal, manoeuvre, that kind of thing. But then when we got to back into the town and we had to do a 3-point turn or something like that, I said, I needed to wake him up. Okay, there's still a bit more I need to learn here, help me out. Yeah. As I grew in preaching and having goes at things like that, I remember that Mark Mumford in Derby, he would give me an opportunity to have a go in the middle of his talk. So he'd be doing the talk, and then I'd come and tell a story, something like that, just to introduce me to growing confidence and some skills of it. And then eventually, when I first got to have a go, I thought, come on. But of course, it was the summer slot, the slot in the summer where they just give someone a go, and most people are away anyway, it doesn't really matter. Mark asked you to preach in the summer, don't be offended. Okay, but that's what was going on there, yeah? You can do the summer slot. And I was growing in enthusiasm and confidence. Some of you might be questioning whether there's been any growth at all. But actually, at the same time, I was getting, I do it. and then I'd get some feedback from Mark afterwards. There was, it was quite tough sometimes, because like, if you know Mark Mumford, you might think he's this really nice guy. He's not that nice. He can be brutal. He was like proper giving me some stick about some of them, but it was for my good. Yeah, I was growing in enthusiasm and confidence, but there was lots to learn, and he was coming alongside me and helping me. The disciples began to experience these things, these sorts of things, at times like the feeding of the 5,000. So, it, for example, Mark 6, 35 to 44 is the feeding of the 5,000. Now, this is what happens. Jesus says to them, okay, you've been around with me for quite a while now, you've seen different things I've done, you've helped a bit, it's your turn. So what I want you to do is, I want you to go, and you're going to feed these guys. They're kind of, well, they're a bit up for it, but they're kind of going, well, can't we just nip to the shop, you know, and get some stuff there, because we haven't got enough. And he's going, no, we've been through this before, what I want you to do is I want you to do it. Now, they've seen some kingdom breakthrough, but they still weren't completely confident. But in that, what happened was they stepped out in faith anyway, and they had a go, taking all that they'd been equipped with from Jesus, and they saw things miraculously happen through them before their eyes as the food was multiplied out and multiplied out and multiplied out. And Jesus was standing back watching. He wasn't doing it. They were the hands that were doing it. And there's something about being equipped and recognizing that we can't do something, being equipped, but then actually beginning to take steps of faith into something new. Yeah, you've got to have a go. And it's in the having a go sometimes that we begin to really grow, isn't it? It's in the having a go and being given space to have a go by somebody else. They become less and we become more, and we have a go, and then confidence starts to come. We begin to grow in faith and see what happens. And that's what happened with the disciples. They were beginning to have a go. Jesus knew that there was a day coming where they wouldn't just be having a go, it'd be all on them because he'd be gone. But this was the first steps of them learning something for themselves. And guess what? They were honoured in their faith, and what they'd been equipped with was sufficient for them to be able to go and be a success. There was another time, Mark 9, 14 to 29. So there's kind of the transfigurations going on for a few of them, which is quite a phenomenal event. But at the same time, some of the other disciples, they're out on mission in pairs. Yeah, and you can read this later if you want. So they're out on mission in pairs, and what happens is they come across, he's been equipping them. So if you look in the likes of Luke 9 and 10, Matthew 9 and 10, you see Jesus equipping the disciples to go out on mission in pairs, don't you? He says, you've seen me do it, I'm going to give you a coaching session, and I want you to go and heal the sick, raise the dead, all the easy stuff. In Mark's Gospel, transfiguration is going on, they're out doing some of that stuff, some of these guys. And then they come across this like demon possessed person, and they can't deal with the demon. And so the crowd get giving them a bit of jet because they've seen Jesus deal with the demon, and these guys are supposed to be with Jesus. Jesus comes along, he deals with the demon, yeah. And then he takes them aside afterwards, and he just gives them a bit of coaching. He coaches them a bit more. Just gives them a bit more. They've had a go, and now I'm going to just give you a bit. You've learned a bit, okay, here's a bit more on top. And he says to them, this particular kind, these kinds, they only come out with prayer. So let's look at that then. Yeah? There's an ongoing coaching going on, but they've been sent, they've gone, they've been equipped. And Jesus is helping them. They're doing it, but he's helping, yeah? They did it, he helped. And then finally, you get to this stage where it's like, they did it, and he left. He did. He actually left. At this point, the disciples are high on enthusiasm and confidence because they've been properly equipped now. They actually do know what they're doing. They know who they are and who they're not. They know who they need to rely on. They're filled with the Spirit of God. We're into Acts. The Spirit's come. They are high on experience and on competence because they've been doing a lot. In fact, they've reached a place of unconscious competence. So they're no longer are they like doing it but having to think about how to mirror signal, they're not having to do that anymore because they're in the flow. It's become second nature to them. Yeah? It's become second nature to them. High enthusiasm, high confidence, high experience, and high competence. And Jesus says to them in the Great Commission, go and make disciples. And they're ready to. And they do. Now, today when I drive, and I'm not saying I'm the best driver in the world, my wife will testify that I'm not. But sometimes, like, as I said, I'm from the northeast of England. Sometimes I go back home to see my mum and dad. It's a 3.5 hour drive. And I've got back there sometimes, and I'm like going, I have no recollection whatsoever of that journey. How did I get here, and why am I alive? What happened in that major intersection? I have no clue. It was unconscious competence. I just did it. It just happened because I knew what I was doing. Didn't even think about it. Yeah? That's what being equipped to be a disciple is really like. Yeah? I'm not quite there yet with preaching, so go easy on me. Don't have me for dinner. But Peter and John and the disciples, they were. You know, in fact, Jesus said to them that they would do things that even he hadn't done. And they did it. It just happened, didn't it? There's a time where they're walking to the temple, and this their shadow falling on people as people are being healed. I don't recall reading about Jesus doing that. He might have done, but it's not recorded, is it? They weren't trying, they were just being who they were. Pretty cool, eh? Pretty cool. So Jesus used this journey of intentional process to train his disciples and raise them up to be missional leaders. But what did it look like to be the disciple through this process? Let's have a look at this. So I've added a little red R, which you can't see because the background's kind of red. You see what I've done there, though? That was meant to be impressive, but you can't see it. So we're back to the start. He did it and they watched. Okay, when Jesus started out on this journey with them, he was high on direction, high on example, and he was on low on discussion and consensus. Yeah? He cast clear vision, clear instruction, and they had a choice. Come follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. And then he went. They had a choice, and those that followed, they followed, those that didn't. Yeah? But it wasn't a discussion about it, it was directive. This is what we're doing. This is where we're going. You come and follow me. Can you imagine Jesus speaking the thing? All right, I'm going to start my ministry. And I'm going to pick 12 guys. And he goes, okay, I have you. Okay, gather around. Right, gather around, guys. Okay. So, here's the plan. We're going to save the world. Okay? That's what we're going to do. And you guys are going to be a big part of this. So, what I want to do is find out who's got some ideas about how we should go about this. What do you think we should do? Wouldn't have been the best move ever, would it? Probably would have come up with some really stupid stuff. He knew where he was going. No clue. And he knew they had no clue. So he was pretty strong and unashamedly directed in his discipling of them. The cost of that is losing people. The risk. We're going to disciple people, but we're not prepared to say, look, I'm going to help you, but this is the way it's going to be. In love, of course. Some people might not make it. Jesus said to the rich young ruler, this is the deal. Go sell your stuff and come and follow me. I wasn't prepared to pay the price. Didn't really want to be a disciple. Jesus didn't go, well, I didn't need all your stuff, so come along anyway. Because he knew the guy needed to learn. Yeah? Death to self comes by being very clear on how much it will cost people to come with us. And some won't, but we have to be okay with this. Yeah? Because it's not about us. If it is, we need to go through some discipling about our identity. And we're all on that journey all the time. So this first phase is kind of characterized by Jesus being directive. Second phase is characterized by him being more of a coach, really. Yeah? So remember when we were saying that the second phase, the guys suddenly had this dawning realization of that they were in trouble because they didn't know what they were doing. Yeah? At that point, Jesus comes alongside them as a coach. He comes in close and he goes, okay, now you see it. Now we can get something done. Luke 12:32. Do not worry, little flock, my Father is pleased to give you the kingdom. High direction and example still, but now there's discussion going on. But the discussion isn't on the basis of what we're going to do, it's more about, okay guys, here's how you learn what you can't do. It's flipped. So there's a lot of accessibility to Jesus in this season. He spends a lot of time getting alongside them, making time for them, making time for people. The danger here as a discipler is that we indulge and we lord it over people and we don't bring the challenge that's required in order for them to grow, or we let them off the hook perhaps. And the danger for ourselves is of not spending enough time helping people, but doing the quick fix instead. You know, sometimes you notice the phrase, if a job's worth doing, it's worth doing well. Well, not to Jesus. Jesus would say, if it's worth doing, job's worth doing, it's worth letting someone else do it really badly and then helping them learn how to do it better. That was nice and snappy, wasn't it? Letting people grow. Let's not be fixers all the time. Let's not go and fix stuff for people. Let's not go and bail people out of stuff all the time. Where are they going to learn? They're going to learn in the trouble, aren't they? So let's come alongside them and coach them as we're doing that, if we've got something to offer. This is what Jesus did. So there's an investment of time required in that phase of discipleship. Death to self comes when we spend lots of time with people, like a parent. Our schedule is not entirely our own. The cost is time. We've been planting a group into one of the market towns around Leicester recently, and we kind of set them off, and they're all full of enthusiasm, etc. And then suddenly, it's quite a young group of people. Suddenly, around them starts to gather mature families, all older than them, and they hit crisis. Oh, how do we lead older people? How do you lead people with kids? We're not really sure what to do about that. I've had to step back and go and spend quite a lot of time coaching them, encouraging them, equipping them, meeting them with these people, endorsing them to these people. And now they've reached a point where their confidence is up again. But they weren't expecting that. They thought that they would just somehow grow a church that was conveniently younger than them and easy to lead. They hadn't even thought about it. Doesn't work like that in life, does it? The first phase then for Jesus as a discipler was consensus. That was kind of is epitomized by the word consensus, or pastoral care, but particularly consensus. So by the time the disciples have gone through unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence to conscious competence, they know some stuff. He's equipped them well. Yeah, he's beginning to show them a bit more respect. I don't know that he never respected, but don't mean he's beginning to give them a bit more room. Yeah, so you see, for example, in John 15, there's a critical moment where Jesus, it's a powerful passage, isn't it, about the Father and the vine, etc. And in the midst of it, Jesus says to the disciples, he's kind of saying, look, we've been on this journey a while now, and I no longer call you servants, but what? Friends. I no longer call you servants, but friends. In other words, our relationship, the footing of our relationship has changed a bit. Yeah? Direction's lower. There's more discussion. There's more consensus on what to do. They let them have a say. Yeah? There's accessibility to him. But there's a legitimacy to the consensus now. It's fun. They're working together. They're cooking on gas. I just want to say something about this at this point, about being a discipler or a leader or something like that. I think we have to get... There's something important about becoming self-aware about the way... our own style. And some of us in the room will be consensus-orientated people. Your natural bent will be towards consensus. So you'll want to do that. Come on, let's work this out together, guys. Thing. And others of you will just be a kind of a bit more bullish, directive. Let's go! Woo! And there's nothing wrong with either, yeah? Except that when there's something wrong with one of them. And there's something wrong when you're doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. And Jesus had this capacity and ability to change his style depending on the circumstances and depending on where people were at. So where he was really directive at the beginning, as we saw, he didn't give them a say in where they were going. By the time they'd learned some stuff and they were on this journey and they'd grown a bit, he did flip to a bit this consensus thing. He changed the way he operated. That's important. Because if you want to take someone somewhere and you start off with consensus, you're never going to get anywhere. It's not going to get off the ground. It's going to be a poorer form of what it could have been. But when you get around that to this sort of third stage, if you're not able to start to give people a bit more room, a bit to breathe, if we insist still on, look, I'm deciding you here, yeah, and so I'm just going to keep telling you, then basically we don't give people room to grow, we don't give people room to breathe, and actually we don't make disciples. We've got to change our style. So it's good to be self-aware. What's my natural style, and am I adapting it to the circumstances of the people that I'm trying to invest in? Finally, again, they did it and he left. This is delegation, okay? So low direction, high consensus, low example, because they've seen it all now, and high explanation. So Jesus gathers them. Here's the explanation. I'm off. You're going to do everything that I've been teaching you for the last 3 years. You're going to go and make disciples of all nations, teaching them everything. I'm going to send the Spirit, he's going to be with you. Okay, let's go. Something about discipling people, about knowing when it's time to let go. Knowing when it's time to release people. That's about, becomes about our identity. Am I ready to let go? Jesus was able to do that. I don't know whether you've seen people hold on to something for ages and ages and ages and ages, and then they go, it's kind of like, I've got the ball. You've got the ball. And they say, I'm a good delegator. That's not delegation, that's abdication. Yeah? Jesus did true delegation by going through this process with them all the way through. So I just want to pull this together quickly for you, because I'm conscious of the time. One way that we remember this is by thinking of it as like a square. Yeah? Square shaped thing, because it's a 4-stage process. And so we see this. He did it, they watched. He did it, they helped. They did it, he helped. And he did it, and they left. That was a trick question. You're still listening. They did it, he left. Yeah? And then we talked about this journey that the disciples went on from unconscious incompetence through conscious incompetence. To conscious competence, to unconscious competence. Come on. Yeah, and that's the journey that we go on. While at the same time, Jesus, the discipler extraordinaire, moved from direction. This is where we're going. To coaching. Okay, I need to get close to you guys now because you really realize what you don't know. And I need to invest in you. To consensus. Okay, guys, we're getting somewhere now. What do you think? What would you do here? I'm going to release you a bit. To delegation, eventually. And that's the pattern that we see in Jesus, with the disciples throughout the New Testament. That was sufficient, when done well by Jesus himself, to invest in 12 guys, who would invest in a few more, to see the church where it is today. It was good enough for him. If we can do it well, I suggest it might well just work for us. So just in the corner there, put that star. Because that is a key place for us. That's where it flips. If we apply this to ourselves, from we're doing this, okay, to the people we're investing in are doing it. That's where we've got to change our style. And often, from what I've seen, people sometimes just get a bit stuck there. They don't actually get around that corner. But when they do, it's powerful. So just as we finish, I want to remind us, call us up. As those who are called to be disciples who make disciples, we must lay down our lives for others to make this journey. They will need opportunity and investment. It's going to take our time and our energy. The same applies if we want to be invested in. We have to be open and honest and vulnerable, and show how our personal brokenness has led to our transformation in order to lead by example. But if we're willing to attend to it and resist the temptation to cut corners, to go for maximum efficiency, we can accomplish what many people have never accomplished in their lives and be those who make disciples. So I just want to ask you to, I'm going to ask Mark to come up and he'll bring us into land in a minute, but just to give you a moment to reflect on these questions. As a disciple today, out of all the things that we've talked about, what's striking you? Can you see yourself in that process as someone who's being discipled in something? Or can you perhaps identify an area of either character or competence that you'd like to be discipled in? And perhaps as a disciple maker, someone who's going to invest into people, what's striking you in that process? Do you even see yourself as being worthy of being someone who can make disciples? Because you are. You have the Spirit of God in you. You have a life worthy of imitation to somebody who isn't as far down the track as you. So what's it going to look like for you to be a disciple maker in some way, for someone, whether it's in character or in competence? Is it someone in your small group? Is it someone that you're reaching out to who doesn't yet know Jesus? In all of this, what is Jesus saying to you today? And what would you do about it?